Jamstack can significantly reduce your cost, improve the largest contentful paint metric, eliminate some of your backend support requirements, and make your developers' lives just much easier.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Development Best Practices Podcast, brought to you by ILM Professional Services. I'm Jason Erdahl, your podcast host, and today we welcome back Josh Taylor, ILM Senior Consultant. Today, Josh and I get to talk about the Jamstack. Josh and I will talk about the Jamstack methodology, static site generation basics, and swap some war stories. We'll also talk about learning the Jamstack, edge computing, and what maintenance looks like. Let's go! Josh Taylor, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, good, good. It's been a minute since we've chatted. How are things down in the great state of Tennessee?
Cold. We had a few ice storms, had power out for a couple weeks. It was great.
These are always great things. I know a bit about snow. We have not had the power outage that you guys have. So kudos. Minnesota has been a slightly nicer place, though freaking cold. That's pretty normal. So,
yeah, the South isn't known for snow, but we do get quite a bit of ice, and ice weighs everything down and snaps telephone poles.
Yeah. I saw the pictures. A wild time. Say, you are a returnee to the podcast. You know what's coming next. Can you give me a best practice in something other than development?
Sure. So I'm sure everybody's had to, disconnect a washing machine or hook it up or do anything where you're completely turning off a valve or opening up a valve. So one little best practice for that, that might be a little counterintuitive for a lot of people. So let's say you completely turn it to the right to shut it off, right? Give it a little twist to the left or the other way around. Oh. When you completely open it all the way to the left, give it a little twist to the right. If you've ever had to deal with one of those valves that just gets stuck and you had to really put some elbow grease in it to get started, once it started, it's fine. That's because you didn't give that little bit of a twist, because it will naturally kind of move on its own.
Okay.
And it'll actually wedge itself in there and get stuck. So giving that little bit of twist, I'm talking just like an eighth of a turn.
Right.
Will prevent it from getting all stuck up.
A lot of righty tighty and a little bit of lefty loosey. So that is good advice, making sure not to jam it up. Oh boy, that's a bad joke. Because we're talking about Jamstack today. Get it? Jam it up.
Oh, clever.
My god. Okay, hey, let's get to the content. People are gonna tune out here if they haven't already. Both of our listeners. Let's start with the basics. What is a Jamstack? Does Jamstack stand for anything? Is it a framework, a programming language, a company? Using multiple jellies on your toast? What are we talking about here?
So Jamstack's not a product, a combination of products, or even a framework. Instead, it's a methodology for creating web applications that takes greater advantage of modern web browsers and standards like HTTP2. The JAM part of Jamstack stands for JavaScript APIs, which are often just serverless functions, and markup. To unpack that a bit, a lot of the tasks we once relied on the server side to accomplish can now be done competently by the client side. JavaScript has continued to become more sophisticated. HTTP2 makes parallel requests more efficient on the client side. And frameworks like Next.js, Svelte, Gatsby, etc. have made it easier to either completely statically generate web applications or at least blend static client-side components with server-side ones. Do you like the idea of putting multiple jellies on toast, though?
I will admit I'm old enough to remember that when I thought about a static site generator, it was typically Dreamweaver or Microsoft Front Page. But then I was really proud of myself when I went to applications and everything was dynamic and it's really cool. So I am quite confused about this. What is a static site generator?
Sure. And my first experiences with web development was actually with FrontPage and Dreamweaver back in the 90s.
Okay, cool.
HTML4 days. But a static site generator basically is just an application that takes in content that you provide to it and spits out plain old HTML files, CSS, and JavaScript that you can host on a static file store like Azure Storage, S3, Netlify, Vercel, etc. And this differs from the traditional approach of just deploying an index page that calls the entry point of your application, be it React or Vue, Angular, etc. That the work of retrieving the content, your SQL queries, your REST calls, they're done ahead of time in your CI pipeline. This doesn't preclude you from making some API calls on the client side if you do need some dynamic content or authentication. But it does remove the requirement of hosting a custom web server to deliver your site.
I have to imagine it's a bit faster as well, and I'm sure you're going to get into this. I do recall a tragedy, 9/11, when most newspaper websites were down, and we had been toying around with the idea of generating a static homepage as opposed to it being dynamic, using Perl, of all things. And we were like, okay, we can't keep our website up. The traffic is just too crazy because of this tragic event. It's time to roll it out. And we rolled it out, and we were one of the few websites that were up during that tragic, tragic morning of 9/11 when we were dealing with this. So, and I'm sure you're going to cover all the benefits of performance. It's just, it's hard to remember that day, but great to remember how fast everything was when we got rid of all those dynamic components. So, but anyway, what are the benefits of developing your website in the Jamstack?
Sure. Jamstack can significantly reduce your cost, improve the largest contentful paint metric, which I'll explain in a bit. It'll eliminate some of your backend support requirements and make your developers' lives just much easier. I'll dive into each of these one by one. First, you got the matter of cost. Cloud storage is dirt cheap compared to compute. I mean, compare the cost of hosting a gigabyte of data in the cloud versus operating a VM or a container for a month. Getting rid of that Node.js, ASP.NET Core, etc. server in place of just a storage container alone is a big boon. But if you factor in all the support you're doing to keep your application updated with security patches, new features, what have you, it becomes even more enticing.
Right, right.
Secondly, on the topic of support, there is now one fewer server that can crash on you, one fewer server to maintain, to tune scaling on, and answer tickets for. As long as Azure Storage, S3, what have you, is up, your app is up. If you're relying on client-side API calls, and you still have those there to support, but we try to reduce those as much as possible when you're writing Jamstack applications.
Cool. I like that.
Next, we come to metrics. Jamstack applications tend to have much better LCP, or largest contentful paint, scores than traditional applications. You might know that metric as first contentful paint, as a little bit of the older term. But why is this? Well, as I said before, you've pushed most of the content retrieval and rendering tasks that take time up to your CI pipeline that you execute once. Your users are receiving pre-rendered HTML that your browser can load very quickly. Depending on your framework and your use case, this could remove a lot of the need for having a virtual DOM and all those round trips that go back and forth between servers every request.
Okay, cool.
If the static components are insufficient for some feature on your site, you can take the approach Next.js does, which combines static components with server-side rendering of server-side components when needed, though that does bring back the need to host your own server.
Right.
It's important to keep in mind, though, that Jamstack is not just an acronym for 100% static website. Use a solution that makes the most sense for your own unique requirements. Finally, Jamstack can make developers' lives much simpler. you can be sure that every client will receive the same markup as you see locally. Creating previews or demos becomes a breeze, as you just need to run your app, your pipeline, and stick to output on a file store somewhere. You also have one fewer environment to set up. As long as your CI/CD pipelines have the correct tooling available, you're set. There's no need to create VMs or containers or install dependencies. You build it, you upload it, profit.
Reminds me of the South Park. So, collect underwear, profit. But in this case, it's much, much more logical. You have a middle step. You have build, upload, profit. Very nice.
I didn't know how to pronounce the question marks.
Nice. So how fast could a typical developer pick it up? Would they have to learn some specific new technologies?
Not at all. I mean, if you're familiar with writing front-end applications and making your fetch or Ajax calls, you have all the tools you need already. Jamstack is pretty much just about the way you design and build your applications rather than some new framework or library you have to learn.
Excellent. I read somewhere that Jamstack uses edge computing. What is edge computing? And what are some of the practical benefits of edge computing?
Some of the more sophisticated implementations of Jamstack applications are starting to take more and more advantage of edge compute, but it's certainly not a requirement. The short and sweet of what edge computing is taking backend code, like your serverless functions or APIs, and then moving them geographically closer to your users in order to reduce latency.
Cool.
It's similar to the concept of CDNs, but applied to compute rather than storage. As I mentioned previously, though, we should really be trying to reduce the number of round trips that are made at request time. My advice is to first try to leverage static generation as much as possible. Leverage that CDN as much as possible to bring your assets closer to your users. If the requests that are needed for largest contentful paint can all be statically generated, then the CDN is doing all that hard work for you. For the pieces that do require APIs or functions, try to use traditional methods that you're used to, like Azure Functions, Lambda, traditional APIs, etc. Then measure your metrics. If your metrics meet expectations, then focus your efforts on improving the other areas of your application, such as the user experience or new features. If the metrics aren't meeting expectations, then and only then would I investigate incorporating cloud compute for your application. Just bear in mind that the concept of edge compute as a service is relatively new and immature as of recording this podcast. So danger, here be dragons.
Fair enough. Good warning. What does the maintenance of a Jamstack website look like?
Really depends on your organization. In a typical setup where you have designers, content creators, developers, architects, you'd work as a team to come up with the various types of components, pages, integrations that you would need. The developers would work on creating a data model, integrations, and front-end code that allows the content creators to add new content and update the site. Popular way to create content for smaller teams is to just forego the CMS and have the site parse markdown files with YAML front matter, which is essentially just some YAML that sits at the top of your markdown files.
Cool.
And you could have the markdown for the entire page. You can have it for individual components, etc. These markdown files are checked directly into source control, which then trigger a rebuild of your site, which would then republish.
Got it.
Another option that's a bit more scalable as your project grows is to utilize a headless CMS, which is usually just an application that has a WYSIWYG editor that your application can then talk to at build time with a REST or a GraphQL API. And this differs from a more traditional CMS that you might be used to, like WordPress, and that it's just storing your content as JSON or Markdown rather than actually serving the front-end application itself. And there's some SaaS options out there like Contentful. There's self-hosted ones like Strapi, or even static options like Netlify CMS, which is kind of a middle ground between just checking your content into source control and actually using a headless CMS. Most of these systems have some way of triggering your CI/CD pipelines through webhooks, etc., when you're ready to actually publish your changes.
Oh, that is really cool. Not nearly cool as the fact that I did not make an Ichabod Crane reference when you mentioned a headless CMS. It's not Halloween. One of our two users said they like my dad jokes, so I'm trying to integrate that in a little bit more. I hope that's okay. So gotta satisfy 50% of our audience here. And that's a good stopping point, I think. We're trying to keep these podcasts short so they can act as a springboard for your own research. Be sure to listen in a few weeks to part two of our Jamstack series with Josh. The Jamstack, when to use it, managing build times, and Josh's favorite setups. The Development Best Practices podcast is brought to you by ILM Professional Services. Did you like the potential benefits of the Jamstack and want to give it a try in your organization? Or maybe you've been doing it for a while now and you're pretty sure you're doing it correctly, but would love an experienced architect to look it over. Or maybe you need some help from a knowledgeable Jamstack practitioner over a longer term. In either case, ILM can help. Please visit ilmservice.com today to request some assistance. As we mentioned at the end, we do have some great listeners and hope to get more. So if you like what you heard today, please tell a friend about us. If you have any questions or need anything else, please email us at podcast@ilmservice.com. Take care.